The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. We're here to talk about the issues that can empower us. And we break the program into segments: health and nutrition, healing, exploring the latest in science, environmental issues, socially relevant issues, but viewed from a different perspective. Wherever necessary, in-depth original investigative reporting, more than any other radio program in American history. And by the way, I'll give you some ideas, some upcoming investigations we'll be doing. And then a guest, and guests that can make a difference, guests you will not hear on other programs. For example, today, Professor Jim Garrison. He is the founder and president of the Wisdom University. He was also the founder and president of the Gorbachev Foundation. Quite simply, in the State of the World Forum, he is one of those unique individuals who is both spiritual and humanistic and progressive, who looks at the world and asks, how can we make it better without at all being compromised by any particular political, economic agenda? He'll be on today, and we're going to talk about looking at voices of wisdom. And then joining him will be John Jeanette. He is a communication scholar. He is an author. And he will also be talking about what he believes is important, providing forums for all the new, young, vital voices. We're very much in agreement with that. In fact, I have set time aside on the Progressive Radio Network just for young voices, teens and 20s and 30-year-olds, to have forums. Where most radio and television, they don't have that. We do. We'll talk about that today. So those are the guests. Those are the issues. We have a lot to share. And a little postscript on yesterday's four-hour special. It went longer than what I had wanted or hoped, but we were not able to get it in any less. And partly that's because of I have always appreciated when someone has something to say, let them say it. This idea of constantly jumping in, interrupting people, is, I consider, just bad broadcasting. If we really are listening to learn, or at least to gain some perspective of what someone's trying to share with us, then we have to let it work itself out. And it can't always be scripted into tight little sound bites. As you will see, we have 8 different original in-depth investigative reporting reports coming up, including next week. We have one on vaccines with representative physicians and scientists from 14 nations joining us to share their concerns about vaccine safety and efficacy. We have a 2-hour special on autism, but a different approach to autism. We'll be looking at long-term normalcy in a group of over 500 individuals who had full-blown autism or Asperger's syndrome, who today you could not diagnose them as having anything wrong. To the contrary, some are at the top of their classes in regular schools. They have regained their complete sense of awareness and sense of self. It's wonderful. Why hasn't the world learned about this? If any drug did this, even for one person, it would be headline news. Well, we have 500. So we're going to bring you their stories and their parents to try to shift some attention onto this unique paradigm. That's a 2-hour special. Also, for all of the sufferers of Gulf War syndrome from the first and second conflict, their needs are still not being met. The damage and death toll is rising. A special reporting on the science of Gulf War syndrome the cover-ups, who's involved, and hearing from the Gulf War vets themselves. Also, we'll be doing a four-hour special on AIDS. I will not go any further into who's on it, but it is a blockbuster. It will really shake the paradigm, the existing paradigm. And a lot of the people who are in the complete control of the pharmaceutical industrial complex, we have some whistleblowers that will be on that show, showing how we've been lied to and manipulated. We will also be doing specials, a new special, and it's taken us over a year to prepare for it, because every single statement must be corroborated independently with full documentation of showing you how the official report of 9/11 was, well, it was not accurate, and gross discrepancies, and we can now fill in some of the spaces with some experts. So that just shows some of the different investigative reports you'll be hearing on upcoming programs. Let's begin. We know that diabetes is bad and growing, but it's growing faster than anyone could have anticipated. According to the latest studies of the CDC, we now have officially 26 million people with diabetes. Now, that's a 10% increase in just the last year and a half. Quote, these distressing numbers show how important it is to prevent type 2 diabetes and to help those who have diabetes. That's according to Ann Albright of the CDC. Well, now here's the problem. What exactly has the CDC, the FDA, the U.S. Public Health Service, or the Surgeon General done to prevent diabetes? How about nothing? Because we checked. I mean nothing. So one agency and one group says, yeah, we've got a major epidemic here that's killing people. And how about the 50 million Americans who have not yet become officially diabetic but are on their way and are pre-diabetic? We are talking about then closing in on 80 million Americans. Well, I'll tell you why you will not hear at any time, now or in the future, from this or any other administration, how we can prevent diabetes, because they would be going up against those who have political power and lobbyists, the fast food industry, the sugar industry, the soft drink industry, French fries, pizzas, hot dogs, all those people that advertise on Super Bowl and television and take out big contracts in schools and in cafeterias and in hospitals to put their junk food that causes this there. And then the sedentary lifestyle, watching television, Twittering, on the computer, but not out exercising. And then excessive stress, which produces hormones that create biochemical imbalances. Diabetes, to figure it out, is very simple. To tell the American public the truth is not so simple. But at least here, you'll get the protocols. Now, I've been suggesting you start juicing and eat a lot of fruit, and in particular the fruit that is the most powerful as far as healing the DNA, actually changing damaged DNA into healthy DNA, are the polyphenol-rich berries. I advocate people using at least 5 servings of berries a day out of the 11 servings minimal of fruits and vegetables a day. And I know some of you are doing a lot more than that, and I also have a lot of people tell me how much better they feel and look, and their hair and their skin and their fatigue and their diabetes and arthritis all gone or improving because of these changes. You're way ahead of the curve, but at least mainstream science is paying careful attention. This is from the peer-reviewed journal Medicine and Science and Sports and Exercise. Montmorency cherry juice reduces muscle damage caused by intensive stress exercise. That's the name of the article. And this is reported in by mainstream science. This was also done at the London South Bank University. Quote, juice made from the Montmorency cherry, that's the tart cherry, can boost the recovery of muscle strength after intensive exercise. Interesting, because in the New York City Marathon and in all my tough competition, we give our runners and walkers at each juice stop, we have our own table, natural living table. We give them coconut water, rich in potassium and electrolytes, and red juice, which is rich in Montmorency cherries. and some other berries. And every single person has finished the marathon. We have never had one who did not. In fact, I can recall it was, I believe it was 1993 or 4, the 40K National Championship was in New Jersey. Elliot Dimon, one of the great coaches and promoters of sports, was sponsoring it. And there were about, I'm going to guess, around 130 of the best athletes in America in it. You do not do a 40K national championship unless you are a local champion or a state champion. So you have people from Los Angeles and Detroit, all these great people, Gary Morgan, all these great athletes come in to do it because it's only a mile and a quarter less than a marathon. I mean, it's a long jaunt, and we're still, it's a very hilly course. So based upon my previous times in long races, I was seated 55th, and my buddy, Franco, who is also a great race walker, and quite simply one of the best coaches in America, we were seated virtually equal. So we were just going to pace each other, and we had trained hard. Just to give you an idea of the training schedule, we would do running 12 miles around the park each morning. And I remember one morning we were out there running, and we were running up Heartbreak Hill at the north end of the park, and we're just chatting. And I said, "What's our pace?" And he looked down. We just passed the mile marker. He says, 5:27 per mile. So when you're running at 5 minute pace per mile, hilly, and 12 miles, you're in shape. Anyhow, then after that we would go back and do 25 story. Floors of a building I lived in, running up 25 times, and then an hour on a VersaClimber, and then 600 sit-ups. Because when you're on those hills, it's the stomach muscles and the lower back muscles that get you up the hill. And then weight work on the legs. So we started at 4 in the morning. It was a long workout. It generally took 5 hours just to do the workout. Anyhow, into the race we go. Now, all things being equal, at the end of the 6 miles, the first 10K, we were only two people out of place because my buddy, George, from West Virginia, had come up. And he had never seen a race like this. And he was out there, and everyone else was having their colas and jolts and these caffeine drinks to keep their energy going. I tried something different. I tried a juice. And it was a combination. I had some green vegetable powders, and I had red powders, including the Montmorency juice, also some raspberries and some other fruits. But every single time I got one, I got, instead of water, it was half water and half this all mixed. And when you're really moving and you're pounding on that course, and it was hot, boiling hot in the middle of August, you can't slow down. You just have to kind of throw it in your mouth. So all the judges along the course kept saying, "Gary, you okay?" And I said, "Sure, I'm fine." And then at one point, Elliot says, "Gary, are you sure you're all right? You're looking really bad." I said, "Elliot, I'm feeling great." I ran by him. And then I realized, I looked down, and I had all this green, it looked like vomit, all over my jersey. Then I understood why they were concerned. They thought I was throwing up. No, that was because I couldn't get the darn juice in my mouth. But what was important, that was a very unique day for me, because I told Franco at the 7 mile mark, I said, "Franco," I said, "I feel phenomenal." I said, "Let's pick the pace up." And, no, we can't. If we pick the pace up, we'll be dead at the end. You know the rules. Go slow, negative splits, get faster further on. I said, "But I'll tell you something. I'm feeling like I'm not even moving right now." I said, "I'll tell you what, I'm going to go on out, and if I'm wrong, you'll catch me somewhere along the course." Okay. So I was having 6 of these juices per lap, and a lap was a little over, I think, a mile and a half or 2 miles. And when I hit the 20K mark, 12 miles, 12.4 miles, I knew something was going on in my body. Because I'd never been able to keep going faster the further I went and feel better. It was as if I was just starting off. So I just kept pounding. And then I realized at the 18-mile mark that I was no longer in 55th place. I was up around 20th place. And then at the 20-mile mark, I saw the leading top elite national champions, Olympians, right ahead of me. And I'm thinking, holy cow. And then I just said, what the heck? I'm going to just do this. So I started my kick. Now, in athletics and track and field, the kick is when generally the last 20 yards or the last 50 yards. And I'm kicking with 4 miles to go. And I'm just going to sprint, full out sprint. And that's what I did. And I remember about a mile later, I caught these guys. And I went right by them like they were standing still. I remember one of them said, where'd he come from? And I could hear it as I went by. And Elliot was smiling because he was at the finish line. And when I came in, I think I was a minute 45 seconds ahead of the second place guy. And it's the first time a master athlete had ever won a 40K open championship. And I set a new American record that day. And afterwards, not a single person came over to ask me how I did it. And then I kept wondering all the way back. I felt terrific afterwards. And there's a little piece that Elliot did with a picture in the Asbury Park paper. And I believe now it was because of the enormous amount of polyphenols that kept rejuvenating my mitochondria. I wasn't taking coenzyme Q10 or NADH. But now I look at this new research on, aha, the cherry juice. Well, if the cherry juice will do it, why won't the raspberry juice? Why won't the blueberry juice? Why won't blackberry? I believe they all have the polyphenols which will do that. So for all the athletes out there, this is good science, and it's supporting all the good that we can do our body in a natural, non-toxic way to recover from our athletic events and even to help us sustain them, just like L-carnitine does and coenzyme Q10 does and NADH does, taken before an exercise, and then creatine monohydrate and ribose and glycine during a workout or glutamine during a workout. We have a lot of good science that nutrition enhances exercise. One other study here, we're now looking at why tomatoes in their red color are so beneficial specifically for our heart. And then there's latest research that show it protects against DNA damage. This was a South Korean study published in the peer-reviewed journal Atherosclerosis, and it says that 15 milligrams of lycopene per day for 8 weeks increase the activity of superoxide dismutase. By the way, wheatgrass juice will do even more than that. That's why wheatgrass juice is so powerful. 1 ounce a day, whoa, you're getting a tremendous amount of superoxide dismutase. In any case, it reduces the damage to the DNA in the white blood cells. And that, in turn, brings down your bad C-reactive protein levels, which is a marker of inflammation, which is a completely independent predictor of cardiovascular disease, and it helps reduce your systolic blood pressure. So all that comes from tomatoes, tomato juice, eating tomatoes, stir-fried tomatoes or stewed tomatoes are all good. And by the way, the most powerful of them all, when you lightly heat the tomatoes, is in a tomato sauce. So all those pasta sauce that they use all over the Mediterranean, did they make the right way? They're doing it right. And finally, for those of you who thought, well, what's the whole purpose of fibers? How about this? Plant fibers can boost your immune system markers. Who knew that? That's right. There's the European Journal of Clinical Nutrition that talks about plant-derived polysaccharides increase the immune response by modifying certain serum proteins. So, quote, our study reports novel findings showing that the ingestion of standardized mixtures of plant-derived polysaccharides, that's fiber, can significantly change the N-glycosylation status of serum glycoproteins in normal healthy individuals. And that's from St. George University in London. What that means is that plant fibers, both digestible and non-digestible, also impact the health of the bile and are very important for our immune system. So all good. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment. Please stay with us. Yesterday, we did a four-hour nonstop radio special in-depth investigative report on the subject of Dr. Wakefield and 12 other scientists who were condemned by one single investigative reporter who was working on a story which was published in the Times of London and the British Medical Journal, and that set off a whole campaign against Dr. Andrew Wakefield and these other scientists. And today they have been completely excoriated in the media and the medical community. Now the question is, why? What would be the whole purpose of that? And then I went into the investigation. I don't know Dr. Wakefield. I've never met him. But I look carefully when I see something like this happening, because it didn't sound correct. And this is what led to this special investigation. And earlier in the week, I had interviewed one-on-one for an hour Mr. Deere and allowed him a chance to make his statements. And I chose not to argue with him on any particular point, but rather simply to get his point of view and then to match that point of view against prevailing documentation, because otherwise you have two people or three people or 10 people each saying something, but who do you believe? Well, in my case, I believe the person that actually has qualified documentation and independent proof of their statements. And so until you actually challenge someone with the facts, okay, where's your proof? You don't know if what they're saying is correct. And quite simply, Mr. Deere is a very articulate, well-spoken individual who's more than capable of presenting some very strong arguments on his own behalf. But that doesn't make that what he has said is accurate. Here is some follow-up from yesterday's program, and I'll just go over a few of it. First of all, I want to thank the Autism File Global for putting up the show. Here's one of the comments, and this is from Glax. It says, "The show is riveting. 3 days ago, Noll allowed Brian Deere to speak on his show without the shameful hectoring indulged in by Anderson Cooper or Stephanopoulos against Andrew Wakefield. Here, Deere's claims are subject to rigorous analysis and shown to be flawed and erroneous, quite apart from the key issue that he withheld evidence from the General Medical Council when making his successive complaints, which would have exonerated the doctors on the principal charges, or that despite his denials, he published confidential information about children on the web." Okay. There are dozens of comments. That was just an average one. But I'm going to put that up there. Now, there are a few other things. This is from a reporter. And I won't get the reporter's name, but it's a reporter for a major publication in the British, in London. And this was sent to me this morning by the person who received it. And it says the following. This is from the reporter. "As a journalist, I want to hear Andrew Wakefield's side of the story and print it. And all we get is the British Medical Journal saying they've not even bothered to contact him because there's no reply. I'd personally be fascinated to know who and when the British Medical Journal claims to have contacted Wakefield. Isn't it true?" This is what's important. Please listen, everyone, because you never know what's going to happen until after you do something. Here's one of those little pieces that can be extremely important. Quote, "Isn't it true the British Medical Journal did not contact Wakefield or any of the other 12 Royal Free doctors before they put their editorial out in which they allege fraud. Then this is the response. The questions that you're concerned with were put to the British Medical Journal by Gary Noll yesterday in a four-hour investigative broadcast, which the British Medical Journal has still not answered, won't answer, or can't answer. Andrew Wakefield was on the show yesterday answering Deere's allegations. He was also being given interviews and answers, answering questions on TV and elsewhere. And I and a great many people would like to know what the British Medical Journal's answers are. I know Gary Noll would like to know. British Medical Journal clearly did not carry out even the most basic legal checks on their story. And it is now also clear that they did not carry out even the most basic checks on what Deere has claimed. So what is the British Medical Journal saying about all this? They have so far refused to answer any questions and have gone to ground. What are their answers? Anderson Cooper did a five-minute interview on CNN, which he did not let Andrew Wakefield answer questions. The Gary Noll Show put out a four-hour research broadcast yesterday. That was in response to an interview with Brian Deere on Tuesday, and Deere refused to appear against anyone else except Noll. And I would be interested into how any newspaper can properly cover these and myriad of other issues in an interview which they cannot publish the answers to without detailed fact-checking across all aspects. Only now, in January 2011, we find there's absolute proof Deere withheld the only 11 documents in existence showing all three charged doctors were operating under proper ethical approval, showing they were telling the truth. None of the documents were in the General Medical Council hearings. Deere withheld them, but he was on notice because he was given them because they were relevant to the ethical issues. The absence of documents was a running sore through the General Medical Council hearings. Deere knew that he was there almost every day of the 200-plus days of the hearing. Professor Walker Smith was only able to produce the letter he wrote when at Barts Hospital asking that clinical ethical approval be transferred to the Royal Free Hospital when he moved there in 1995. There was nothing, I repeat, nothing in the General Medical Council documents, all of which I've seen, and the prosecution did not. Deere made his first formal complaint to General Medical Council on 25th February 2004, claiming to be acting out of public duty. So how can knowingly withholding material evidence relevant to a large proportion of the General Medical Council charges be acting out of public duty? And does that not raise questions about whether Deere may have committed a criminal offense of perverting the course of justice in doing so? That is aside from the issue raised by Dr. Harvey Markowitz as chairman of that same general medical committee that was overseeing the panel, putting his name to an editorial making an accusation of fraud whilst an appeal was pending in the high court against one of his own panel decisions in the longest ever general medical council hearing. And Markowitz is linked to the ABPI-funded company Medico Legal Investigations and so indirectly linked to Deere's activities. They advised Brian Deere on how to get Wakefield before the General Medical Council in the first place before Deere had written a word and after being hired to get his own big story on the Sunday Times. And by the way, and specifically by Paul Nukai, whose father was involved in approving the PlusRx MMR vaccine, which was withdrawn by GlaxoSmithKline in 1992 because it was so dangerous. That is also aside from the issues raised about the undeclared interest of the panel chairman, which would seem debarring them absolutely from being on the panel under the Nolan principles. McDivitt was dropped when the General Medical Council challenged by five journalists before the hearings commenced. Kumar did not disclose he wanted compulsory MMR vaccines of all children, a position described by the British Medical Association chairman Meldrum as, quote, Stalinistic and medically and ethically dubious, unquote. So what's happening is that now this has caused a lot of attention and people are paying, this is not going to go away. This is just the beginning of it. Also, I did not mention yesterday because time did not permit one more person who was involved in this, not directly involved in this case, but involved in the allegations that there is no connection between any vaccine and autism. And I want to quote from Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the chairman of Waterkeeper Alliance and professor at Pace University, quote, central figure in the CDC vaccine cover-up absconds with $2 million, quote, a central figure behind the Center for Disease Control claims disputing the link between vaccines and autism and other neurological disorders has disappeared after officials discovered massive fraud involving the theft of millions in taxpayer dollars. Danish police are investigating Dr. Paul Thorsen, who has vanished along with almost $2 million that he was supposed to be spending on research. Thorsen was a leading member of a Danish research group that wrote several key studies supporting CDC claims that the MMR vaccine and mercury-laden vaccines were safe for children. Thorsen's 2003 Danish study reported a 20-fold increase in autism in Denmark after the country banned mercury-based preservatives in their vaccines. His study concluded that mercury could therefore not be the culprit behind the autism epidemic. His study has long been criticized as fraudulent since it failed to disclose that the increase was an artifact of new mandates requiring for the first time that autism cases be reported on the National Registry. This new law and the opening of a clinic dedicated to autism treatment in Copenhagen accounted for the sudden rise in reported cases rather than, as Thorsen seemed to suggest, the removal of mercury from vaccines. Despite this obvious chicanery, CDC has long touted the study as the principal proof that mercury-laced vaccines are safe for infants and young children. Mainstream media, particularly the New York Times, has relied on this study as the basis for its public assurances that it is safe to inject young children with mercury, a potent neurotoxin, at concentrations hundreds of times over the U.S. safety limits. Thorsen, who was a psychiatrist and not a research scientist, not a toxicologist, parlayed that study into a long-term relationship with the CDC. He built a research empire called the North Atlantic Epidemiological Alliance that advertised its close association with the CDC autism team, a relationship that led the agency paying Thorsen and his research staff millions of dollars to churn out research papers, many of them assuring the public on the safety of vaccines. The discovery of Thorsen's fraud came as the result of an investigation by Aarhus University and CDC, which discovered that Thorsen had falsified documents in violation of university rules, was accepting salaries from both the Danish University and Emory University in Atlanta, near CDC headquarters, where he led research efforts to defend the role of vaccines as not causing autism or any brain disorder. Thorsen's center has received $14 million from the CDC. Thorsen's partner recently came under fierce criticism after damning emails surfaced showing Madsen in cahoots with CDC officials intent on fraudulently cherry-picking facts to prove vaccine safety. Leading independent scientists have accused the CDC of concealing the clear link between the dramatic increases in mercury-laced childhood vaccines beginning in 1989 and the epidemic of autism and neurological disorders and other illnesses affecting every generation of American children since. Questions about Thorsen's scientific integrity may finally force CDC to rethink the vaccine protocols, since most of the other key pro-vaccine studies cited by the CDC rely upon findings of Thorsen. These include oft-referenced research articles published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, the American Journal of Preventive Medicine, and the American Academy of Pediatrics, New England Journal of Medicine, and others. The validity of all these studies must be questioned. Well, quite simply, they're wrong, meaning they're bad studies. And now we've got this guy out there who took a lot of money from the CDC to try to prove that thimerosal mercury doesn't cause problems. Once you see the politics of it, then you understand how bad it is. Now, just from our environmental segment today, a few things that are relevant. This is from Sandy Leon Vest from Common Dreams. Dire predictions, conspicuous emissions in our perilous energy future. And it says that the latest science, quote, from an international group of researchers, quote, the year 2010 was the hottest ever measured since the beginning of recordings 130 years ago. And that is from Dr. Leverman, professor of climate systems dynamics at the Physics Institute, Potsdam University. And yet, despite repeated warnings regarding the perilous nature of unmitigated fossil fuel consumption, they are, quote, doing nothing. And that is going to lead us, quote, into unprecedented climate change, has the Earth hurtling down a path of catastrophic proportions. Okay. Then let's balance that with what the administration is telling us. That, okay, we're going to put a lot of money into clean energy. And here's where you got to really pay attention. Because now we know that the North Atlantic water is tied to the heating in the Arctic. Quote Science Daily, temperatures of North Atlantic Ocean water flowing north into the Arctic Ocean adjacent to Greenland, the warmest water in at least 2,000 years, are likely related to the amplification of global warming in the Arctic, says a new study from the University of Colorado Boulder. And that's from the Academy of Sciences there from Dr. Spielhagen. So now that's happening, and all this is coming together, and yet what are we doing about it? Well, then we're going to do something good. We're going to put our money into green energies. But did anybody pay careful attention, because the green energies that we're being told are being funded, they're not green energies. Look carefully. Almost all the money that Obama is directing is for nuclear and gas and clean coal. He is redefining with his energy specialist what clean energy should be. So clean coal, which is an oxymoron, you can't have clean coal, that's getting a lot of money. Nuclear is the biggest push. That's where they're saying we're going to clean energy that doesn't pollute. Well, first of all, nuclear does pollute. And if anyone saw the scientific paper that Dr. Jay Gould and I wrote, along with Dr. Ernest Sternglass, which is up on my website, you'd see how all these nuclear facilities are dangerous, and they're not cost-effective, and they're not green. And then also in gas. Someone's convinced Obama that there's clean gas. Well, gas is not clean. And so we are being manipulated. Mark my words, when the environmentalists finally wake up and take a look at the actual place where the money is going, you'll see it's going into these areas. So let us not be deceived by this, so that we should have a wake-up call on this. And finally, there's a movement underway simultaneous to this, a quiet movement. But now we can identify the 123 U.S. lawmakers who are supporting polluters over the health of our country. Quote, attacks on the Clean Air Act would cause the increase in air pollution and health risks, including asthma, for millions of American children. More than 24 million Americans with asthma, including over 7 million children, are at increased risk of adverse health consequences if 123 U.S. House members in 35 states are successful in preventing the U.S. EPA from updating the Clean Air Act, according to data compiled by the National Resources Defense Council. So what has happened is, while everyone was paying attention to something else, along comes a lobbyist for these major polluters, and they give a lot of input to Marsha Blackburn, Republican of Tennessee, Shelley Capito, Republican of West Virginia, Ted Poe, Republican of Texas, John Carter, Republican of Texas, and then they introduce different House resolutions to block the EPA from increasing the power of the Clean Air Act, in fact, dismantling the Clean Air Act, which Ralph Nader was responsible for putting in place the first time. And we're going to come back in a moment with my guest. And then on Sunday night, I'm going to be doing a series of health commentaries, including what happened to downtime, the extinction of deep thinking and sacred space, and plus how we can break the carbo habits, and also an in-depth analysis of what could be the most important new health discovery, generating fresh new energy cells in the body of the mitochondria with PQQ. And I'll give you the latest on that, which is very important, and controlling your blood sugars in a targeted way. and I'll show you how to do that. All positive, 8 p.m. Sunday evening over the Progressive Radio Network only. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome, all of you. By the way, one more thing. When sometimes I'll get a cynic who doesn't believe that there's global warming, and the other night when I was riding to a film shoot, I had the radio on. I always like to hear who's saying what, and it was Mark Levin in that kind of unique voice of his, and where he's saying, you know, well, we've got the worst winter. Look outside, the snow. So there's your global warming. Yeah, Mark. That's actually why we're having one of the worst snows, coldest days on record, is because of global warming. These people just refuse to look at all the evidence. But another person wrote me an email not long ago about the water. You know, we supposedly have the best water. Well, think well before you turn on the tap, because the latest report shows that our water is now filled with nanoparticles of antibiotics, psychiatric and cholesterol, and asthma and epilepsy, and heart medications in our drinking water. Other biosolids found in drinking water include antifungal drugs and the toxic plast biphenyl A from some bottled waters, which people ironically drink to avoid tap water. So it's in the water we're drinking, and that's unfortunate. By the way, everyone has been emailing me about the capitulation of the major Whole Foods chain and a few others, three or four other major chains, to say it's okay for Monsanto to have its genetically engineered food. They don't have a problem with it. Well, long ago I told you that Whole Foods was a chain of compromise. And it did not have the integrity of the small health food stores and the food co-ops and the farmers markets of sticking with 100% organic. It could have. Locally produced, it could have. And being a leading voice with all of its customers on these important social issues and health issues like the food safety bill, it chose to do none of that. None. And so just boycott them. I mean, what more can you do if someone chooses not, and it's their right to support Monsanto and genetic engineering, and but it's your right to say, okay, I'm not going to buy in your store anymore. So don't buy any brand, national brand, that supports genetic engineering. It's that simple. Next week, here's who you're going to hear on this program. Dr. Robert Silverstein, board-certified neurologist and cardiologist on improving our immune systems and reversing immune-related disorders. Also, one of the most unique people you've ever heard, Professor Robert Stittler. He's a leading Mayan expert and linguist and anthropologist. He spent 30 years living with the Mayans in the highlands of Guatemala and Chiapas, in southern Mexico, and he's going to tell us the real Mayan legacy. And it's really at odds with all the nonsense you're hearing about, you know, the end of times and coming up next year. Then the International Medical Council on Vaccination, representing 14 countries, will have Dr. Susan Humphreys and Dr. Oyeb and all these others on, talking about the latest on vaccines. Also, we're going to be talking about something that's rarely ever discussed by Dr. Robert Masters. It's called spiritual bypassing. It's a growing problem in popular Western spirituality when we use spiritual beliefs and practices as a means to avoid dealing with unwanted feelings and unresolved wounds and developmental needs. In effect, we hide in the spiritual lumbo jumbo. We'll talk about that. Then Dr. Peter Levine, regarded quite simply as one of the world's greatest authorities on trauma and the psychology of brain science. And we're going to talk about opening the spiritual parts of our brain. And then Mark Hertzgard, one of America's finest investigative reporters, going to talk about the environment in the future. And then Dr. Kevin Nelson, we're going to talk about, and he's from the renowned neurologist at the University of Kentucky, we're going to talk about doorways. Ever hear of doorways? That's brain science showing how we can have transformative and transpersonal experiences by doorways through the brain. So that's what we got coming at you just next week. Let's now go over to my guest standing by, Dr. Jim Garrison, who I gave a bio earlier in the program, co-founder and president of the Western Wisdom University, co-founder and president of the Gorbachev Foundation, and he was instrumental in the founding of the State of the World Forum, which remains one of the most important global networks of visionaries from all walks of life discussing more sustainable global civilizations. And joining him is John Jeanette to talk about, and John is a communications scholar, among other things, and they have a new program starting today, following this, on called Voices of Wisdom on the Progressive Radio Network. And they'll be it follows Danny Schechter's The News Dissector. They start at 2 o'clock. Nice to have you with us today, Jim and John.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, hello.
Yeah. Either one of you who'd like to address this, have we reached an impasse today in the 21st century where our past understanding and definitions of wisdom need to be revised to make it more relevant for the threats and crisis facing us, not just Western nations, but the world at large? And in the past, wisdom has been associated with penetrating insight into the nature of human being, and often in terms of philosophy, theology, and spirituality. And I believe there's a kind of stasis in these old definitions, as invaluable as they might be for individuals. However, what can we clearly say today as we watch our leaders in almost all walks of life, where they hold sway over public opinion and government, finance, medicine, everything, bungling their way and making matters worse in everything they do, and yet we call these people insightful, intelligent, and I would say they are certainly not wise. And finally, wisdom is simply absent, in my opinion, in the decision-making process in almost all of our major institutions. So I'd like for you both to speak about this disconnect, this myth people hold, giving more relevance to intelligence instead of wisdom, and what kind of wisdom today is most necessary in the public discourse and decision-making of our leaders.
Well, I'll start, and thank you, Gary, so much. I've been listening to your show over the last half hour or so, and I just want to applaud you for your truth-telling about the gravity of the crisis that we're in and the corruption at high places in the government that we believe is entrusted for our own well-being and security. I think that it's clear to anyone paying attention that we are being faced by systemic crisis, and that time is running out before we experience catastrophic system failure. So the question that we are grappling with at Wisdom University is what wisdom needs to be applied to the situation at hand, where the institutions are no longer capable of providing the integrity that we need for honest public discourse. And I think that there's much that can be said, but I would make just two quick points. One is that wisdom moving into the future, I think, has to be more and more derived from the earth, from Gaia, from the primordial, and less from the wisdom traditions that humankind has evolved over time, because it's the earth that we are now destroying, and it is from the earth that we came. And therefore, it's back to the earth, back to the forest, back to the shamanic understandings of the natural rhythms of the earth that we have to rediscover. The second point is that in the midst of all this chaos, I remain optimistic and abundant, because there's also, if you look around the world, an extraordinary spiritual renaissance that's taking place. People are waking up to the truth of what you're saying. They're not quite sure what to do about it because the corruption is so pervasive and the media is so controlled. But there are wisdom teachers that are emerging that we, through Wisdom University, are trying to profile and enable at a larger and larger level. And if you've looked at the work of Paul Ray, the sociologist, around the emerging phenomenon of the cultural creatives, the number of people who actually agree with you is rising year by year. And so there's a critical question of how we enable the wisdom that people intuitively know, even though they're being told by their governments and the media the opposite. And then how do we connect these people from around the world into a critical mass that can actually make a political difference within a narrowing window of opportunity before some serious damage that's irremediable actually takes place? That's the question that Wisdom University takes up in many of our classes and will be taking up on this radio show week by week. And we really thank you and Rich Gale and others at PRN for making this opportunity available for us.
Good. Was that John who just spoke or Jim?
That was Jim Garrison.
Oh, okay, Jim. John, I want to address this to you. When we're looking today at the energy of connecting with what is important, I see that in contemporary spiritual organizations there remains a serious disconnect between the wishful, hopeful thinking among many spiritual people and a commitment to take real action, to be true activists, spiritual revolutionaries who are not afraid to take our leaders and corporations and media to account. In fact, most of this done by the secular progressive community, with some exceptions like Rabbi Michael Lerner and some others. But for the most part, this is the bipolar divide in thinking that to be deeply spiritual, committed to an esoteric or spiritual practice, is somehow incompatible with feeling outrage at the raping of huge numbers of the human community and wildlife and the earth at large. So my question is, if we are to be truly compassionate towards all other humans and sentient life, and if the depths of compassion is so deeply spiritual within ourselves that needs to be touched intimately, then does not spiritual compassion require us to be activists and spiritual revolution activists in that sense? Your thoughts?
I think we are obliged to have a sense of purpose beyond simply exploring our own spirituality. When we talk about getting back in touch with the earth or awakening the divine feminine or the sacred feminine within us to kind of balance out the patriarchal overload that we've had, those things are not just intellectual exercises, but the purpose of that is so that we can then go out in a more enlightened frame of mind to change the world through small wisdom circles throughout the world.
Okay, well, how we do that is what I'm sure you'll be discussing, and this is really, really needed. We need people who can bridge social activism to correct wrongs. Whoever created the wrong, how do we get it right? And also to come from a more spiritual point of view, so we're not separating and isolating and excluding people because they may not be our race or color or politic or ethnic group or educational standing. They're simply human beings working together to heal the world and its problems. And that's why I think your program is going to be so important and virtually revolutionary in radio. So Dr. Jim Garrison and John Jeanette, thank you for being on. Just a little preview of what's coming in 2 hours, 2 p.m., on Voices of Wisdom, a brand new program on the Progressive Radio Network. Thanks to both of you. I look forward to listening.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
I'm Gary Nall. We're coming up to the end of this program. I want to thank you all for listening, especially those of you who listened yesterday. We had a record-breaking number of people who actually listened for the full 4 hours. That's something. And we have a whole lot of good stuff coming your way this weekend. Tune in at 8 o'clock Sunday night over the Progressive Radio Network. And It's all about health. It's all about nutrition and your questions and comments. And I'm going to talk all about getting healthy in a good way. Have a nice day, everyone. I'll see you on Sunday evening.
Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.